Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 324. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how you doing, bud? It's been about, 5 minutes since we recorded something last time?
Yep, not long, but good topic for sure. Draft's over. Talk some FYPD. It's never too early because some people start FYPDs immediately.
Yep.
Most of mine aren't, but some people do. I've certainly talked to people that have their starting right now. Same. But I'm really excited to break it all down.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of draft talk here, obviously, over the last few days. On what would have been Tuesday night, we did the first round recap over on the Bleacher Report app, and we just got done doing the live stream, just grading the top 10 farm systems right now. But a lot of draft talk, and we're going to keep it going here on Tool Shed with our initial FYPD discussion. We're going to go over our top 10s, some additional players we like, and this will be the first of several episodes over on FYPD, the rest of which will probably be after the season. We'll do a mock draft, further breakdown of risers and fallers probably. So at least probably two or three more episodes later on in the year. But we always like to do things like our initial reaction, our initial rankings right after the draft. So it's always a fun episode. But before we get into all of the FYPD goodness, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com. We both got our initial FYPD rankings up there, so go check those out. And, of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package at RotoBaller.com. All right, Chris, so let's just start right off the bat, given our personal top 10s here. It was a fun draft, a lot of exciting names, especially on the hitting side. So who are your top 10 and your initial FYPD rankings?
Let's start at the back end, a little more fun. I have Hagen Smith at 10. I have Bryce Rainer at 9, Connor Griffin at 8, Cam Smith at 7, Nick Kurtz at 6, Braden Montgomery at 5, Jack Caglione at 4, Jay Weatherholt at 3, Travis Bazan at 2, and Charlie Condon at number 1.
All right. For me, I have Theo Gillen at 10, went to Tampa Bay, Nick Kurtz at 9, Vance Honeycutt at 8, and I'm definitely acknowledging I am the high man on Honeycutt, willing to plant that flag. Number 7, Chase Burns, 6, Connor Griffin, 5, Jack Caglione, 4, J.J. Weatherholt, 3, Braden Montgomery, two, Travis Bazan. I was trying to combine two and Travis there. and one, Charlie Condon. So let's get right into Condon there, Chris. Both have him number one. I had him one before the draft. And then going to Colorado just makes that set in stone, if it wasn't already. And that's no knock against Bazzano, who's a very good all-around talent as well. But just getting a bat like Charlie Condon, who is potentially six hits, seven power, into a place like Coors Field. He won't provide more than a handful of steals every year, but this is a potential middle-of-the-order bat hitting for a high average and plenty of home runs. You can dream on 280-plus and 35-plus home runs, plenty of runs in RBI as well. So a guy that probably moves pretty quickly, too. He's a very advanced bat, great approach. So he's, I think, the easy 1-1. And the thing that could change that is if Roki Sasaki decides to come over. That's probably not going to happen. Even if it did, I'd still have to make a strong case for Condon at ones. I love that bat that much.
Yeah, the bat special has been for 2 years. I think you could easily question the track record, but he was the National Freshman of the Year in 2023, draft-eligible sophomore this year. Just shows you the kind of talent that he has. And yes, the run-scoring environment is up in college baseball, so that's obviously notable, was that, yeah, guys put up big numbers. But regardless, look at what Condon did compared to the rest of the competition, and he broke the BB Corps home run record with 37 in 60 games, slash 433, 556, 1009 slug. Yes, that's a slug over 1,000. He can – really the biggest thing for me is that he improved his athleticism so much. He can play either corner infield spot. Coming into the year, I think he was like, okay, it's a lock for him to play first base. But no, I think he can play third. I think he can play a corner outfield spot. The bat, elite, like – 97 mile an hour average exit velocity was well north of what Dylan Cruz, Wyatt Langford did. He had a ninth percentile EV of 112 miles an hour, which is well north of those guys from last year. And the contact skills made improvements this year. 77% in 2023, 80% in 2024. The end zone contact, 89% this year. Chased it just a 22% clip. There are some kind of questions on whether he can handle spin or not. And I think that that's something to watch out for, is that can he handle breaking balls? I think he can adjust and be fine. It's a 35 home run bat that is going to have a big average boost in Coors Field too. I guess my question is, this course screws the people on the road, like where they're so good at home, but is that environment screw with him on the road? We'll see. It's probably the best bat that they've had in some time. So yeah, Condon was the easy one for me, and then he went to Colorado, so it's an easy one. But yeah, you're right. Yep. Sasaki, I get those questions. Roki Sasaki would be 1-1 in any draft class. Whichever one you put him in, whether it's this year, whether it's next year, whenever he comes, Roki's going to be 1-1.
Yeah, and who knows when that's going to be. But for now, I mean, we can't assume he's going to come over this year. And again, probably doesn't. So yeah, Condon, easy 1-1. Basically, I think he might even have a slightly better pure bat than Langford, or they're pretty, I think there'll be pretty close bats long term. Obviously Langford will provide a little more speed, so I still think Langford will be the better player long term, but that's like the level of bat we're talking about here, and the potential stud with the bat again, six hit, seven power. So yeah, this was really exciting, and it was a good chance this is going to happen too, is we thought maybe it was going to be Weatherholt that won, then that pivoted to Bazzano, obviously, and then all right, 2 and 3 is Cincinnati and Colorado. So just having that type of environment, either of the two for Condon, was really exciting. So glad that he got to one of those two orgs. And then we both have Travis Bazzano here at number two, who probably is a more well-rounded all-around player, not quite the similar bat overall that Condon has, especially with the power. But you can make the case that, you know, Bazzano, best pure hitter in the draft, or at least in that discussion. And obviously doesn't have the massive power, but you know, could be. What do you think about Bazzano's powers? I think a lot gets made about the hit tool. Obviously, he's one of the better hit tools in the draft. You know, he's a good runner as well. Yeah, I think he could be maybe like an Ozzie Albies level, like 20, low to mid-20s home run bat. What do you think about Bazzano's power, Chris?
It made improvements this year. I think that it's going to play. I think he can be a 20 home run bat. I don't think you should sit here and think that he's going to hit anywhere near 28 that he hit this year with metal. But there is good power still in the profile. The EVs were good this year. They weren't quite Condon level, but they were pretty solid, 96 average EV. And again, I want to take all these with a grain of salt, but again, when you compare them to the rest of the draft, you know, it's still like 99th percentile exit velocity, average EV, and then the 9th percentile, 109, really good as well. I think it's above average power with Bizzana, 20 home runs. He's going to get on base a ton. I mean, he walked twice as much as he struck out. The chase rate was 14%. You know, I think that the biggest negative I can find with Bizzana is that he's a little passive. It's a pretty low end zone swing rate, which I'd like to see come up and him be a little more aggressive on pitches in the zone. And he's a second base only. But I will say that being a second base only type does benefit him for fantasy because there's not a lot of good bats at second. So you know, he can step in and be one of the better hitting second basemen in for fantasy purposes, and it'd be really, really good.
Yeah, and like I said, second base, it was on the rise a little bit. It's taking a pretty solid hit this year. We'll see. Hopefully Matt McClain can come back and help that out. But, yeah, I think he has the potential to be a top five, maybe even top three fantasy second baseman. Again, Brandon could be annual 2020 threat with a you know high average, high OBP. You mentioned pretty passive. He had over double as many walks as strikeouts this year, past year for Oregon State, 76 walks to 37 strikeouts. But it's such a high floor, and with the solid ceiling, again, not the massive ceiling of Condon or even a couple others, but definitely one of the best blends of ceiling and floor in the entire class. And that's why he went number one overall to Cleveland. Just fits Cleveland's model of just getting those good guys up the middle and figuring out the positioning later. So anybody that's playing second base right now, you're just a kind of a placeholder of sorts for Travis Bizzana. So pretty easy 1-2. I think it really starts opening up at three and beyond in these rankings. And you have Weatherholt at three. I have him at four. The only reason why I went Weatherholt at four is I think he's a more well-rounded player than Brady Montgomery, who I have at three, who obviously I love and was extremely excited that the Red Sox got him at 12. And we'll get to him in a second here. But Weatherholt obviously had some of the injuries this year. He's giving me a slight pause. Maybe I'm overthinking it. I probably am. And I probably should have put him third, and I might even make that switch here before too long. But some of those injuries he's already had, again, give me that little bit of pause. Like, will there be some durability concerns here? You know, we've seen that hinder some other prospects. Obviously, Jason Dominguez, Jordan Lawler, just name a couple this year that have had a hard time staying on the field. Chase DeLauder, obviously, is another one. But in general, Chris, you look at the overall skill set of a guy like J.J. Weatherholt, who fell to the Cardinals at pick seven here, looking at a plus hit tool, above average or better run, above average or better raw power as well. Again, he's close to Bizzana, maybe like slightly 95% of a Travis Bizzana, but the profiles in terms of offensively are pretty similar, just a little scaled back, a little lesser upside for Weatherholt. But how do you value a profile like Weatherholt, and are you sharing those concerns that I have about the durability?
I think the durability is the biggest question and concern here, because metrically, him and Bizzana are very close. The contact rates are identical, 84% overall, 88% in zone, chase rate of 14%. Those are toe-to-toe with Bizzana. The chase rate against breaking and off speed, less than 10%, which is crazy. Best in college baseball. I think he runs more than Bizzana, which helps. He didn't run this year as much because the hamstring injury, but sophomore year he did steal 36 bases with 16 homers. This year the power came around a little bit. He put up some good EVs. It was 95 average, 108 90th, again very close to Bizzana, 58% hard hit rate. The question is for both these guys, how do they handle better pitching? If they were in the SEC and did this, then they probably are in the top spot or right there with Condon. But with the pack and the Big 12, there's some questionable pitching, better pitching in the SEC. But Weatherholt's an exceptional athlete. Just can he stay healthy? That's all I need to see, is can he stay healthy enough?
Yeah, and you could even say that about my number three, Brady Montgomery. It was the one injury, the ankle injury. You're hoping it was just an isolated thing, and hopefully it doesn't turn into a long-term issue here. But again, getting a guy like Montgomery into a system like Boston, guy that was rumored to go top five in the draft, as high as number four to Oakland, which I wouldn't have loved as much. But getting him into this system with potential to hit at Fenway in a couple of years. Montgomery was one of the better hitters this past year in college. And again, obviously the ankle injury derailed his season. But looking at a guy that's a switch hitter with big time power from both sides of the plate, and a guy that's, I think, a sneaky athlete as well. I don't think he'll provide a ton of speed, but he could be a guy that gives you 5, 6, 7, 8 steals, something like that, while hitting for a pretty good average. He's got a phenomenal approach as well. Nearly as many walks as strikeouts. I think he'll be a good OBP asset and a potential 30-plus homer bats as your kind of typical corner outfielder. Got a big arm as well, so like it fits right field at Fenway. And a guy that probably is up 2026 or so, but he's my number three there. So where did you have him? You had him, I think, 5 or 6, Chris?
Yeah, so I have Montgomery at 5.
Okay. What are your thoughts on Montgomery?
We know that he hits the ball as hard as anybody in the class. I think he's one of the few hitters with, you know, 270 grade tools. He has one of the best arms in the class from the outfield, like 98 miles an hour from the outfield, which is crazy. Big pop. He posted a 111 90th percentile, which is right there with Condon. And he had the highest average exit velocity in college at 98.7. So those are off the charts. His ex-WOBA on contact, 556, which is nuts. He does damage to all fields. He hits all pitch types well. Some question the contact skills, but 75% overall, 85% end zone. Like, those numbers play, in my opinion. He doesn't chase a ton. Yeah, I think he's going to be fine. Like, he struck out 20% of the time. Like, whatever, that'll play. Even if he's a 24% strikeout rate guy and as a professional, I think he's got all the tools you want. So I think some of the loudest tools in the draft, and certainly one that I want to take shots on, especially if he falls, given the fact that he went 12 in the draft, which makes some people then question and they go a little deeper in FYPD. So I'll be gladly get all the shares.
Where do you think, and it's hard to say, but where do you think is like ADP would end up on average in an FYPD? Do you think it'd be top five? I think maybe more, it might be top five, but maybe more like that 6-7 range overall.
Yeah, I think you're probably looking at 7. I think people are going to take the arms high. I think people are going to probably take Caglione over him. So I think that there's maybe the prep guys. So yeah, 7 feels fair probably.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair range. Let's talk about those arms now. We talked about a few bats so far. Now, obviously, the two big arms in this class, Chase Burns, I have at 7. Chris, you had him at 5? No. Where'd you have Chase Burns?
I have him at 11.
Oh, you have Burns at 11. And where'd you have Hagen Smith?
10.
Okay, so you have him back-to-back. And I have Burns 7 and Smith 11. So similar ranges there. Let's break them down. Who do you like more? Obviously, you have Smith ranked one spot ahead, but let's just break down a little Hagen Smith versus Chase Burns here.
I think Burns has probably the better arsenal, but my gosh, am I really concerned about his home run problem in Great American Small Park? He allowed home runs galore this year, and that was really the only negative and the only downfall that we can really pull in this year is that he allowed 14 home runs across 100 innings. Home run rate a little higher than I'd like to see, and he's had a home run problem his entire career. It's not a new thing for Chase Burns, and he goes to one of the worst parks to pitch in. But obviously, numbers don't lie. At 2.7 ERA across 100 innings, he had 191 strikeouts and 30 walks. It's a pretty aggressive motion. I think it's a high effort delivery, but he still makes it work. He walked 7.7% of batters, 50% strikeout rate's absurd. The fastball averaged 98, touching 101. It was 20 inches of IVB on it, relatively flat, and he misses a lot of bats. 36% whiff rate on the fastball is really elite. Don't see that often. Slider, upper 80s pitch, late depth, good sweep, 65% whiff rate, which is nuts. Throws a curveball on occasion, give him some north-south movement. Yeah, it's low 80s on that. Change up, distant fourth offering in the low 90s. He's got good horizontal movement. There's upside to be like a high-end starting pitcher, but my gosh, am I just scared that he's going to allow way too many home runs, and that kind of holds me back a little bit, even though the talent's clearly there. He certainly bumped down my board after being taken by Cincinnati, which I feared he would go to Colorado, so not sure it's much better now, honestly.
Yeah, it might... I don't know. It might be a little better in Cincinnati than Colorado, but yeah, it wasn't great. I was hoping any results besides those two spots, but obviously that was not the case here. But you know, I rank him ahead of Smith because I kind of wonder, can Smith really establish that third? I'm not saying the rest of his arsenal is bad, but he's really relies on the fastball slider. Can he develop a third weapon? That's why Burns having the more well-rounded arsenal kind of gives me a little more hope for him. And Cincinnati's done a decent enough job developing pitchers. I'm not sure, probably a little bit better than Colorado, though. Colorado's got Dolander and Sullivan that are doing well this year. But so I go Dolander. I go Burns here over Hagen Smith. And Chicago, yeah, they've really been hitting on Schultz here. Obviously, they're not – the system is on the rise, though, so maybe it's not quite as bad. Again, you mentioned their overhaul they've been doing, so it's a better system for development than it used to be, which definitely helps, too. So there's some upsides and downsides to both arms, but – yeah, I go Eileen Burns here due to the more well-rounded arsenal for me, but we'll see. Pretty fun to see how this plays out here over the next couple of years, see which arm becomes the better arm of the two. Really, let's go some more intriguing arms or players here in the rest of the top 10. Jack Caglione obviously is maybe a guy that can go as high as, I think, 1-2-3 for FYPD. Most part probably be Condon, Mazzana, and then Weatherholt. But maybe Jack sneaks into that four spot, or maybe even three. I can see him going as high as three in some FYPDs. Obviously, one of the better hitters in all college baseball this year. Hit over 400 with a ton of home runs and can get up there 95 up or above from the left side. I don't know how much he pitches, Chris. I guess we'll start with that. How much longer do you think Jack pitches, if at all? Or do you think he's done doing the two-way thing?
They said they wanted him to keep pitching. Yeah. Does it actually last? We'll see. I think he's a reliever at best. The command's just not there for him to be a starter. So I think that he's probably a reliever. I'd guess maybe they do it a little bit this year, maybe a little bit to begin next year, or maybe they can it in the spring next year and just let him dip, because it's where the future is for sure. But I think that he's got all the power to dream on. I mean, 33 home runs in 2023, 35 this year. All his metrics improved. The walk rate jumped from 5.3% in 2023 up to 18.4% was notable. And the strikeout rate, he cut from 18% to 8.2%. The contact was surprising, honestly. 80% overall, 91% in zone. People always knock the chase rate, 38%. That's a little bit concerning. You're expanding the zone that much against college pitching. But I do think that that can improve. He's a bigger guy with long levers, so I'm not shocked, actually, to see him struggle with chase at all. But the power's really undeniable. The metrics are off the charts. Hit a ball 122 miles an hour, which is stupid. DH first base only profile. Maybe you can hide him out in a corner outfield spot, but I guess he's a first baseman. So you really gonna have to hit there. Where's the average fall? I think it's a good question, but the improvement in contact rate, at least this year, is encouraging.
Yeah, and even if he's only like a 260 guy or something like that, he looks like a 30-plus homer bat. And obviously, it's hard to say now, but he has all the makings of being a big, prolific power bat at the major league level. Let's hit the other kind of first baseman here in this top 10 with Nick Kurtz, who I had at, what was it, I had him at 9. Where did you have him, Chris? And it was 8 or 7?
Yeah, I think 6. Let me see. Yep, 6.
Oh, 6. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I think this could be the range for Nick Kurtz. I think 6, 7, 8, 9 range will probably be where he settles in. But obviously, he's the two big first basemen in this class with him and Jack. And I think you look at pure hitting ability, they probably end up pretty similar in terms of that value. But Jack has a bit more power, which is why I think obviously the two-way thing potentially gives him more allure. Nick Kurtz has had a pretty good college career for Wake Forest, hit well every year. The lowest OBP he had was his first year on campus, 471. Started off a bit slow last year. I had some people questioning if he was a top 10 guy, but then finished the season strong. Still ended up with a 306, 531, 763 slash line with 22 home runs in 54 games and nearly double as many walks as strikeout, 78-42. How do you stack him up against a guy like Jack Caglione, Chris?
He's just safe.
Yeah.
I think that when you look at a Nick Kurtz profile, it's like the safest that there is. He's hit every year over year. It's just consistent and you know what you're going to get. And yeah, he dealt with some injuries this year, but you know what? He still hit and hit some more. The OBP finished his career at Wake with a 510 OBP, 189 walks to 130 strikeouts and 784 plate appearances, which is pretty impressive. I think that Oakland went really safe here. 61 home runs in 164 games. That'll play. Yeah, you look and I think that you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a high on base percentage type. They can hit for some power too, because he hit 22 home runs this year in 54 games, 24 in 2023 in 56 games. The exit velocities were really good. No shock. 94 mile an hour average was 98th percentile among the class. And the 111 mile an hour ninth percentile was 100th percentile. So the very tip top right there with Braden Montgomery, Charlie Condon. But the contact, I think, is when you look at the best combination of exit velocity, contact, and chase, it's Nick Kurz, because he put up contact rates right there with your Travis Bazzana and JJ Weatherholtz. He hit the ball equally as hard, if not harder. And the chase rate was sub 14%. Is he too passive? Probably. Like 30% walk rate is a little passive. Swing zone swing percentage a little low. Can he get more aggressive? Hopes it's a really safe profile. But my fear is that we've said this before about like Andrew Vaughn or Spencer Torkelson that felt really safe and then they weren't. So I hope that this will be a case where he continues to perform like this, but I do think that Kurz has just been a guy for 3 years. And it's hard to imagine him not continuing to perform like this.
Yeah, obviously one of the best college performers over the last three seasons. Gets into the Oakland system, which actually is on the rise now. Still not great, but I have him as the number one guy there, right up there, pretty close with Jacob Wilson. Obviously, very different profiles, but should be a guy that gets up to Oakland pretty, or Las Vegas, wherever the heck they are. They're going to be, should get up to the major league level. I'll just leave it at that. Pretty soon there, one of the more advanced players in this entire draft class. So yeah, Nick Kurz, if you want to get the slugger and then you got a back half of the top 10 pick in your FIPD, you cannot go wrong with Nick Kurz at all. Before we get into the prep guys here, Chris, let's hit one more collegiate bat who probably is the most polarizing player among top 25 or so FYPD guys. Jack's pretty polarizing, but most people think favorably of Jack's. But this guy, wide range from what I've seen of thought process and evaluations on a guy, Vance Honeycutt, outfielder from North Carolina. I was already really high on Vance. I'm a North Carolina guy, so I've watched a lot of Vance Honeycutt. Same thing with Mac Horvath last year, and they both ended up in the Baltimore system, which was really encouraging, because there's one major red flag with Vance, and is it how much contact can he make? How much average will he hit for? Is he only going to be a 220 guy? Can he at least get up to 250, 260? That's the big question mark and the major X factor. I know it is for basically every prospect, but especially a guy like Honeycutt, because you look at the rest of the profile outside of the hit tool, it's very good. He's a phenomenal defender and has a big-time power-speed blend as well. Look at, he went 25-29 his first year on campus in North Carolina back in 2022. Fell off a little bit last year, but was dealing with some injuries. Still went 12-19. And then this year went 28-28 in 62 games, slashing 318, 410, 714. We did have a strikeout rate over 26%. It's a really polarizing profile. A lot of good, a big red flag. I know I'm higher than probably everybody on Vance. I have him 8 overall. I have confidence that if Baltimore can just get him to sniff an average hit tool, there's some work to be done, but if anybody can do it, it's Baltimore. So I have him 8. That's either going to look really good in a year or two or really poor. We shall see. But Chris, I know obviously you don't have him top 10. Where do you have Honeycutt, and what are your thoughts on the pros and cons of him?
Yeah, so I had him outside the top 30 prior to the draft, but I do like the landing spot in Baltimore. So he's sitting at 27 for me right now. Honeycutt has by far the highest strikeout rate of any first rounder in the bonus pool era going back to 2012. It was really bad, like 27.5% this year strikeout rate. You look at the previous like highest strikeout rates was Kyler Murray from Oklahoma when he got drafted, 26%. Hunter Bishop, when the Giants took him out of Arizona State, that was 25%. You had Bryce Matthews last year going to Houston with a 25% K rate. Reggie Crawford, 24.8%. The demographic of these guys that have the highest strikeout rates isn't very good. A lot of people have comped him to Jaron Kendall, who came out of Vanderbilt. He had a 24% strikeout rate. You look, and the tools are off Honeycutt from a performance standpoint, 28 homers, 28 stolen bases, 318, 410, 714 slash is stellar. He hits the ball incredibly hard. Like, the exit velocities are right there with anybody in this first round. 93 mile an hour average, 109.5/90. The contact rate of 68% against college competition, especially ACC, is bad. It was already a contact rate the worst among college hitters. 79% end zone is not ideal. So I think that it comes down to, can the good outweigh that bad, or can he at least make enough contact to be able to, you know, get to those tools? And I will say, it's not outrageous that he, to think that he's all that dissimilar from some other guys that really made moves. Thinking about some other college guys that really improved their stock, Christian Moore improved his contact rate pretty substantially.
Yep.
Can it stick? That's my question. Does it stick? You think about a Cam Smith, who also had a pretty big rise in his contact rates too. He went from 70% 2023 to 83% this year. Can those numbers stick? And it goes to tell you, Vance could obviously make that jump, but it's really tough to stomach that how bad the contact skills are. And I just fear that, you know, it's, he could be a complete bust. But yep. I will say that the Orioles are a good landing spot. They do a great job developing. He's good in the field. That certainly helps him out. But you just hope that it improves. So there's upside, there's downside, and it's risky. I'll say that. So it's a risk-reward pick. You know, I could see him all over the board. I'm not sure where he'd rank in other FYPD ranks, but I assume it's going to be all over the board.
Oh, absolutely. I have no idea where his ADP is going to end up for FYPD. That's going to be, I'm doing, when you listen to this, go check out the pod I'm doing with James Anderson, Jesse Roach, and Chris Welsh. We're doing a FYPD mock, which is happening about 5.5 hours from now. We're recording Wednesday afternoon. Was it Tuesday? What is it today, Chris? Wednesday. So I got my days of the week mixed up right now. Right now, it's almost 3 o'clock Eastern time Wednesday. We're doing that podcast later tonight, but obviously it'll be out on the same day, because I think the other one's out on Wednesday, on Thursday as well. So check that out. See where Vance Endicott winds up. But yeah, he's talking about upside top five in this class, but then the downside, as you mentioned, is a bust and a guy that's kind of takes a huge fall off of rankings in a year or two if it doesn't work out. So yeah, I definitely felt better like if he landed in a worser development org, but winning in, you know, Baltimore, who we just ranked number one in terms of top farm systems on baseball over on the Bleacher Report app before we started recording this. It's a good, great landing spot. So yeah, we'll see how that plays out here. Actually, I lied. Let's do a few more college bets before we get into the high school guys. There's still a few more near the top here that are pretty intriguing. You mentioned one a few seconds ago here. Two of them with Christian Moore and Cam Smith. And for those of you in redraft leagues, go out and get Christian Moore because he'll be up next week because he got drafted by the Los Angeles Angels. I kid, but he'll probably will be up next year being a pretty solid college bet. But let's hit on Christian Moore and Cam Smith as well, who I remember you had inside your top 10. So let's go with Smith first here. What did you like in the profile that made you put Cam Smith in your top 10, Chris?
I think it's not all that dissimilar from, obviously, we've got him right by Nick Kurt. Is he a safe? No, because he hasn't done it for his entire career. Smith, sophomore, so only two seasons. Freshman year, he struck out way too much, 28%. This year, cut it to 15%. Walk rate jumped up to 14%. That was up from 9% in 2023. He had 16 homers, 22 doubles, an impressive slash line. The swing decisions were highly improved, as I previously referred to. 70% contact as a freshman to 83% as a sophomore this year. Chase rate plummeted down to 21%. End zone contact, 89%. Pretty rounded skill set. You're not going to get any speed out of him, but the EVs also improved. It was, you know, the home run output. He was actually lower on a per plate appearance basis this year, but the exit velocities were incredible. 111 mile an hour, ninth percentile. The average EV jumped 7 miles an hour up to 92. The negative is the amount of ground balls. It was near 50% ground ball rate. I think that if you can get over those knocks, then it's a pretty intriguing kind of profile where he could really excel. So I like Smith a lot. I think the bat's there. It's just, can he lift the ball enough? So yeah, we will see.
Yeah. Again, that's what I was going to mention too, is the fact that it's been a lot of ground balls from him. needs to get a little bit more loft in that swing. But if he does, this is, could be a really good bat in terms of hitting for average, getting on base, keeping the strikeout rate low. He had almost as many walks as strikeouts this year at Florida State, hitting .387. He was close to a .400 average and a .500 OBP, 16 home runs. I don't think he'll be like a 35-40 home run guy, but be a 25-30 homer bat. You know, Cubs have done pretty well developing hitters. Pretty solid landing spot there for Cam Smith. For reference, I have him ranked 14th right now, so I'm still pretty high on him. But this range is a pretty big cluster for me. So you can go a number of different ways here with that. And then we still got Christian Moore here. We got, it's actually a really college heavy. I think, let's see, my third high school bat or player in general isn't until 17. So you got some other guys here who haven't we talked about yet. So we got Bryce, no, that's not Bryce Winter. Seaver King, excuse me, went to the Washington Nationals out of Wake Forest. You got James Tibbs, went to the San Francisco Giants out of Florida State. He was teammates with Cam Smith. We got Christian Moore, who we just alluded to, went to the Angels out of Tennessee. So, and if you can go down a little bit further, like Ryan Waldschmidt out of Kentucky went to Arizona, who I like a lot there. Seaver King, Chris, pretty polarizing player. Didn't have the greatest year, off a little bit. He was a guy that was, you know, you saw like super early, like FYPD or even like mock drafts, stuff like that, or just like draft rankings in general, not even for fantasy. I saw a lot of him like 6, 7, 8 range, then he fell a little bit. Still was taken pretty high in the draft. I think he what was 11th overall. So what are your thoughts on Seaver King? Are you in on Seaver King? And what were your thoughts?
I love the tools with King. I think that, you know, you can stack him up with most anybody in the class. As far as you think about advance, like very similar, you know, King can play up the middle. He's going to play either short, second, center. Like he's athletic enough to do. Transfer from D2 Wingate's track record, a little shorter in D1, but still performed at Wake Forest extremely well. He hit for power. He had 16 homers, 33 extra base hits, 11 stolen bases, 12% strikeout rate, just so aggressive. The exit velocities were at the top of the class, elite. He did put the ball on the ground too much, and only 30% of his pulled batted balls were in the air, so that's also a little bit concerning. But a free swinger, 32% chase rate was one of the higher marks in the class, so how does the hit tool translate? We'll see. He does make up for it. He makes a lot of in-zone contact, which helps. 87% in-zone, that's a nice boost and counteracts the chase rate. So I think there's positives and negatives to Seaver King, but you have to question, is the chase rate going to affect him? It's the opposite of Honeycutt, where the contact skills aren't quite there with Honeycutt, but chase rate's the issue with Seaver King, just a free swinger and quite aggressive. So hopefully he figures it out, because he was a very good interview. When I watched some of his interviews, very professional, just hard worker. I think he's going to make sure that he gets the most out of his profile. It's just cleaning up that chase rate a little bit for me.
Yeah, because like you mentioned, like the upside is absolutely there, where he could end up being one of the top five fantasy players from this class. I think that's truly the upside there. Obviously, good power, even better speed. Yeah, if he can hit for average and keep that chase rate in check, yeah, he could be a really fantasy-friendly player for sure. So I have King at 13. Where do you have King, Chris?
I'm in 19 right now.
Okay. He probably goes in that teens range, somewhere like that. But really, it depends on what type of profile you want. You have a good mix, like that 10 to 20 range. You have a good mix. Again, Christian Moore, second baseman. James Tibbs, too, a pretty solid bat there. Also from Florida State, he was teammates with Cam Smith. He went to the San Francisco Giants. He had a really good year this past year, or this past spring, I should say, slashing .363, .488, .777. 58 walks to 37 strikeouts and 28 home runs in 66 games. Pretty solid first and second year at Florida State as well, but really the full-on breakout happened this spring. And a guy that won't give you a lot of speed and really not a great defender either. So the bat will have to carry him, but a guy that could be, you know, really one of the more sneaky plays in this first round or first 15, 20 picks for FYPDs, because he doesn't have the flashy profile, but this could be above average or better hit and power profile once all said and done. And I think he's a guy that if you're looking for advanced bat that can help you sooner rather than later, if you get anything outside of a top 10 pick, I can see taking a guy like James Tibbs there for sure.
Yeah, Tibbs is a really solid player where I think he can fit in this. It's pretty much a big tier, you know, back here where you could argue for any of these guys. And you know, Tibbs is a really good plate discipline profile. He's going to walk a ton, put up really big OBPs. He's shown he can hit with wood bat on the Cape Cod League. He had 28 home runs, had 47 extra base hits in 66 games this year. Contact metrics were there. The power was there. It's just a well-rounded bat. And I think the kind of biggest question you mentioned is the glove. And it's interesting frame too. Stocky kind of 6-foot frame. Does he move to first base? Can he play a corner outfield spot? We'll see. But no, I really do like Tibbs. And I do like landing spot too. I like him in San Francisco. I thought they got a really good deal on him with that pick.
Yeah, I think so as well. I have him 14. So yeah, my 12 through 15 or 12 through 16 is all these college bats. So I go, let's see, Bryce Winter, Siever King, James Tibbs, Christian Moore, Cam Smith. Really solid. Again, a lot of good collegiate bats in this class. We could Ryan Walshman at Kentucky. I think a wild card who went super late, Dakota Jordan. He's a very fantasy-friendly profile. Hit tool concerns there as well, but a guy that could be a nice upside play. Carson Bench, that's another one. Tommy White, you know, a lot of fun. Kalen Culpepper going to Minnesota as well. A lot of fun collegiate bats. But let's hop on over to the prep guys here, Chris. And the biggest prep guy in this class, Connor Griffin, going to the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, this guy, how many steals did he have this year, Chris? Like 2.6 million or something like that?
I think it was 85.
85, okay. So, yeah, there was somewhere in the 80s. But this guy, and that was in how, like, what, 30-something games? He was averaging, like, nearly 3 steals per game, which,
that's stupid.
When you're a top 10 MLB talent playing against normal high school players, yeah, you can do that. You know, you can just, when you're as elite of an athlete. And I'm not making a direct comparison here, but kind of a similar thought process on Griffin to, like, what we were thinking about with a guy like Max Clark last year, where you're like, all right, you know, Clark has good contact skills. He's a phenomenal athlete. He's going to steal a ton of bags. But then the real X factor is how much power does he ultimately get to? And that's, I think, the same question with Griffin. He's not a plus hitter. I think he's a solid contact skill so far. We'll see where he ends up, if it's 50, 55, something like that. And he's easy double plus runner. We know that. 70 grade, maybe even below. I don't know if I want to go 80 grade, but easily 70 grade. And again, in the field, he can play shortstop, play outfield. We'll see where Pittsburgh wants to use him long term. But that power, how much he develops, is really the X factor. And he's got the frame. He's projection for days. 6'4", 210, already really strong. Could see him adding another 15 or so pounds of good bulk, where he could be a 30-homer bat. Like, he's got that level of upside in him. We'll see where he ends up. I think he's going to be a fun one to see where he kind of settles in FIPDs. I could see him going as high as 4 or 5. I have him ranked 6th right now. I don't think he'll fall much further past 7 or 8. So probably that 4 to 8 range will be the kind of range for him. But phenomenal talent. And if that power does come along, given the fact that Condon doesn't provide much speed, Bizzano's not like the huge power speed guy, I think there's a non-zero chance, Chris, that 5+ years from now, that the best fantasy player from this class could be Connor Griffin. And that's definitely in the cards.
He certainly got that kind of upside. Just given the power and speed, he's an incredible athlete. He's a big arm, good mover on the mound. Some teams actually liked him on the mound as much as they did with the bat, which is pretty impressive. I think that he sticks up the middle. It's either center fielder. I don't say catcher, center fielder or shortstop. So one of those two, and he can play either one. I think people have questioned the hit tool. I know it's high school ball, but he struck out just 6% of the time. I don't want to read too much into high school stats. So he walks a ton. I think that's really the biggest thing, is can he make enough contact? We know the sprint speed's there. He ran a 6.3. I'm messing Griffin all up. A 6.36 60-yard dash, which is like 100th percentile sprint speed for his class. The power's there. It's just the hit tool. And if he hits enough, then yeah, I think that you're probably looking at a really fantasy viable profile.
Yeah, I was going to say, at 3.6, what is he, like Usain Bolt?
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't even know if Usain Bolt can run a 3. I would love to see what Usain Bolt. There's maybe some way you can compare what he ran in his 100-yard dash to the 60. I probably see there's some conversion there. But, yeah, phenomenal athlete there with Connor Griffin. And yeah, if everything clicks with him, hit tool is there, power develops. He's got 1-1 upside for this particular class. I mean, there's really only a few that I say could be the best fantasy player from this class. Probably Condon, Bazana, and him. And maybe outside chance of like Weatherholt or Brandon Montgomery. But it's really those three right there. And really, Griffin could be one of those guys for sure. The next guy here I want to talk about, I absolutely love. I had him at 10, as I mentioned. Theo Gillen went to the Tampa Bay Rays. Very fantasy-friendly profile here. High school bat out of Austin, Texas. So he was a hometown kid in that draft. He was committed to Texas as well. He'll head a little bit east to go over to Florida. But the fact that he doesn't really stand out in any one area across the board. Like, he doesn't have like massive power, massive speed like Connor Griffin has. But the fact that he could be above average to plus across the board offensively, defensively, we'll see if he can stick at shortstop. Some questions if he can, A, if he outgrows it, or B, if he can handle the position in general. So maybe he moves to like second base, doesn't have the greatest arm, but I don't feel if he keeps growing, maybe he outgrows second base as well. So not really sure where he ends up long term, but regardless, the all round profile here is a phenomenal athlete. Power's already there and trending up. Got more projection on the frame to add more power as well. So I had him at 10 because I think he's going to be a very well-rounded offensive player. Again, not sure on the positioning, but he's my number two high school prep bat from this class. But what are your thoughts on Gillen, Chris, and where do you have him ranked?
See, I have Gillen ranked 23 in the class. I think he stacks up with a lot of the other prep bats that are at the top. You can go with really any of them. He's been very injury prone in his high school career, had labrum surgery already, had several issues, but he's a very quick twitch athlete, good bat to ball skills, good speed, which is obviously encouraging. You steal some bases, and the exit velocities have been pretty good as well. I think that he's going to and has become like the prep darling of this class. A lot of people love him. He's not my highest prep. I've got a couple guys over him, but I do think this is a pretty good talent. I think they announced him as an outfielder, if I'm not mistaken. So he's going to play center field potentially. He's got a good frame at 6'3", 200. It's just, can he overcome some of those injury concerns and develop into the kind of player that we think he can? Because the upside and talent's definitely there.
Yeah, absolutely. Who are the other prep guys you have in front of him?
I've got Wyatt Sanford, who went to Pittsburgh, Tyson Lewis, who went to Cincinnati, and Bryce Rayner as well. Cam Kennedy too. So
yeah, Bryce Rayner for sure. Yeah, let's hit Cam Kennedy before we get out of here, Chris. Maybe let's hit Trader Savage as well. We haven't talked a ton of pitchers outside of the big two, so let's get a couple more pitchers in before we round off the show here. Starting with Cam Kennedy, who went 24 to your Atlanta Braves, considered by I think probably the best. I mean, he went back to back with Cash Mayfield, who went 25 to San Diego. But I think a lot of people do consider Cam Kennedy to be the best prep arm in the 2024 class. What are your thoughts there on Caminiti, Chris?
He's so advanced considering he's still 17 and he reclassified, was supposed to be in the 2025 draft. Grew up around the game, obviously, cousins with Ken Caminiti. So, you know, Cam is really advanced changeup, good feel for throwing strikes, which is important. He's a good athlete and mover on the mound. Fastball already up to 97, 17 years old. It's pretty good IVB, good horizontal too, and he throws it from a lower release height. He's 6'2", 5'8", release height, so a little bit lower. A tough arm slot, good extension. It's two breaking balls, curve and slider, with the curve being in the upper 70s and the curve. So slider, curve in the low to upper 70s, slider in the upper 70s to low 80s. Both have really strong sweeping action. Curve gets good two-plane break here. Changeup is pretty advanced for his age, and when a prep guy can have an advanced feel for a changeup, yeah, it's pretty intriguing. So Caminiti, for me, I think makes an argument that's there's as much upside as Burns or Smith if he throws enough strikes. I think that's the question mark around the other guys. It's the home run issue with Burns, the strike throwing with Hagen Smith, and obviously you Savage, you have two who's higher floor, but Caminiti, I think, has as much upside as any of them, which is crazy to say.
And I 100% agree with that. I think if you just look at the tools here with Caminiti, the fact that I'm always incredibly encouraged by high school arm that has advanced feel for really everything. He's got feel for spin. He's got feel for his changeup, which usually you don't see that often, though it's become more common. Some guys in the last few years, like Dylan Lesko, for example, Brock Porter had good changeups when they came out as well. But that's always encouraging if you already have good feel for the changeup and you've got velocity projection to add even more bulk to the frame. So everything's there. And Atlanta obviously has done pretty well developing pitchers too. So really, he checks off all the boxes of a guy that could be a top 10, maybe even a top 5 overall pitching prospect in the next, you know, year and a half, 2 years or so. And another big riser, obviously, like Owen Murphy was that big riser for Atlanta this year before, unfortunately, he had to go on the IL. And we'll see him again next year. But yeah, Kimbrel, he's my number 3 pitcher in this class. And I think, I agree 100% that he has the upside of Burns, of Hagen Smith. Obviously, a little more risk because he is a prep arm, though less risky than most prep arms. But I like him a little bit more than Trader Savage. And there's a little bit of a drop-off for me down to guys like Sloan and Sanja, Cash Mayfield, Santucci, guys like that. So this is like tier 2, him and you Savage. But yeah, all the upside in the world. So if you want an upside arm in your draft, Caminiti, absolutely that guy. He probably ends up, like, I have him 18 overall. Where do you have him in your overall, Chris?
I have Caminiti at 14.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's where I was thinking 15, give or take, will probably be where he goes. Prep arms, you never know where they're going to go in the FIPDs, but definitely the best prep arm by a solid margin, I think, in this class, even though I do have Ryan Sloan a good bit there. But lastly, let's hit on Trader Savage. Before we get out of here, obviously the more high floor guy, there's some upside. I think he is thought of as just being a floor guy. But I don't think that's really the case. And this is a guy with a good 4-pitch mix. Going to Toronto, people knock Toronto, and I think you and I have as well, but their pitching development and ability to keep guys healthy. But the fact that he's a college guy, most of the guys that they've kind of, I don't want to say messed up, but the guys have gotten injured or backed up in terms of their production and skills have been more so the high school guys. But you Savage is a guy that probably doesn't need much time in the minor leagues. Fastball, slider, changeup are all really good. Control above average to plus as well. Great command over his arsenal. Good frame, 6'4", 225. Typical innings eating starters build. So a guy that could probably be up next year at some point and be Savage screams. It's like plug and play number 3 starter. It's a really good number 3 guy. This is going to be a long career in the major league. So if that's what you're looking for, more stability, quicker to the major leagues, then I got a Caminiti. Your Savage is probably your guy and probably gets taken probably in a similar range, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Your Savage certainly, it was a little surprising that he fell to pick 20 to the Blue Jays. And while I don't love the landing spot, honestly, right, Blue Jays have not done a great job of developing arms, but he's one of those you stay out of the way of. He did have a lung collapse in May, which is concerning. There's been some back concerns as well, but it's a high floor, 6'4" righty. He's had plenty of success his entire career. It's a pretty deep arsenal. Look at the fastball. He'll throw a slider, splitter, change in curve. Very high release height, 6'8" release, which is absurd. So it's a high riding fastball. You get some horizontal run on it. The secondary is not as much sweep, obviously, due to the high release point, but you know, the 12-6 curve is way over the top. Good depth in the lower 80s. And the splitter is really solid. So I think that this could be an arm that moves pretty quickly. He's an advanced feel for his arm and for strikes, which is encouraging. So yeah, I'm encouraged by Trey Savage and the pitcher that he is. It's just a little discouraged by the landing spot, but maybe it's one of those where he is fine and doesn't really need much development.
That's my hope, that he's already pretty polished. Won't need more than a year or so in the minor leagues. Probably starts in high A, double A pretty quickly, and maybe even jumps over triple A. We'll see. But that's my hope, that will help save him from Toronto. But we shall see. But to wrap us up, good first episode here on FYPD Talk. It's still a hot topic right now with the draft just concluding the other day. And again, we will do a few more episodes, including a mock draft later in the year, probably after the season, October or something like that. But for now, that'll do it for us, and we will be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.